Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film editor for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me is Roger Eric Tinch, digital and online media consultant for the Sundance Film Festival and Draft House Films, among others. Thanks for being here.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Josh.
It's good to have you back after quite a while away.
Yeah, no, it's really great to be back and to be talking about one of my favorite filmmakers. So.
Right. Steven Spielberg, who has also been away for a little while and is returning after, I guess, about 3 years since the Indiana Jones film, which was not his most well-received film,
to say the least,
of his career. And he's got two movies that are out this week in the U.S., The Adventures of Tintin and War Horse. And Tintin actually came out, I think, a month or two ago in Europe because the character is a big deal over there and not so much in the U.S. Although I remember being a kid and seeing the Tintin cartoon on Nickelodeon.
I remember the comics, the compendium that they had.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's how – that's the biggest thing is the comics that were – that were. I don't think I ever read those when I was –
through it when I was at the dentist's office. This was like in my teens. That always kind of paired with the pain of, root canals and stuff. But still, I look on it fondly.
Yeah. Well, and clearly Spielberg does too, who – and he's had the rights to Tintin, the movie rights, since like 1983 or something like that, since the creator – Hergé, or I totally am sure.
Yeah, I think it's Hergé.
Pronouncing his name wrong. But since he passed away, and Spielberg has been trying to make a Tintin movie ever since. So I guess it's hard to look at this because we can't come at it from the perspective of the fans who've been waiting just as long to see this movie, people who grew up reading these comics or watching the cartoons. And to me, I came into it fairly fresh, and it felt very derivative of Spielberg, of Indiana Jones. I mean, Tintin, like Indiana Jones, is a sort of reluctant, but he's an adventurer whose profession is not being an adventurer. He's supposed to be a reporter, and he's kind of just going along wherever the story, although he never really writes anything. He doesn't appear to have an
editor. Worst journalist ever.
Seriously.
Just like Indiana Jones is probably the worst archaeologist ever.
Right,
who was teaching
Indiana Jones's classes when he was off gallivanting around looking for the lost ark?
Yeah. But I think, I mean, to me, that's sort of why I might have a kind of slanted view of Tintin was because it sort of does call back the sort of golden age of Spielberg as a action film director, which, I mean, in my mind, he's still probably one of the best action film directors around in the way that he can set up, set pieces and be able to, show geography and be able to put emotion into the sequences where it's not just, like Transformers fighting each other and there's no real feeling to it.
Right.
Like, he's able to put some really great wit and whimsy, on top of the emotion. I think that's, to me, why I liked Tintin was that you kind of got those flashes of Spielberg from Indiana Jones days.
I mean, I don't know. See, I think to me, it felt like it was just kind of imitating a lot of what he's done before better with like the Indiana Jones movies. And also, I don't know. I mean, where did you find the emotion? Because Tintin himself is like a completely blank character. He has no personality traits whatsoever other than that he wants to find answers to stuff. And so I never felt that involvement, whereas Indiana Jones.
I think when it comes to emotion, for me at least, it was very much the good versus evil, battle. Towards the end where, to me, one of my favorite sequences is when they're fighting with the cranes.
Right.
Bombastic and as huge as it was, it really was about these sort of two characters completing each of their sort of family's journeys. And I was like rooting for obviously the good guy, and there was some like to me impactful moments about what these two guys were going through and how sort of desperate they were to complete, especially for the bad guy, how desperate he was to sort of complete what his
he had more of a. I kind of wanted to root for him almost because
you're evil.
Yeah, because I'm evil. Well, that's true, but also I don't know the sea captain played by Andy Serkis and the bad guys played by Daniel Craig, and they have this family. I guess it really didn't make a whole lot of impact on me, apparently, the plot of this movie. But it's like their ancestors fought over some treasure, mm-hmm. and so now they have to fight over it for some reason. And I don't know. I found the sea captain kind of irritating. He has a lot of catchphrases, which I think probably – I think they come from the comic, and so you can't blame Spielberg for them. But I don't know that they really
– He was endearing. I mean, he was obviously a comic relief. But right. he was endearing
but
to
then
me,
you also have to care about him because yeah. he's got this tragic backstory.
Which is why I think that's why I was probably drawn to his story a lot more. And his, you know, I think what Serkis did with this character, and I think what might get lost in a lot of talk about the technicalities of the movie is like there's some really, I think, amazing animation happening here as far as, you know, the motion capture and how they're able to change, you know, turn that into these living, breathing characters that are basically made of bits.
Right. I mean,
you know,
let's talk about that for a minute, because so you were impressed with the look and the motion capture, the animation in this movie.
Yes, without a doubt.
Yeah, better than like so Robert Zemeckis films, Polar Express, Christmas Carol, that kind of stuff.
There, on one level, the cinematic feel of it felt less of a computer animated movie and more of a movie that Spielberg would have gone out and practically shot, save for some sequences which were probably impossible to shoot.
Right.
But for the most part, he did not cheat the notion of what a physical real camera could do.
Yeah.
Right. And every now and again he would go past that, but for reasons that were specific to that, to those sequences where he needed to make it sort of just huge and bigger than life. But so on the level of the cinematic, the look of it they got. And just I felt the ease of the way the characters walked and talked, there was something there that didn't feel mechanized to me. Like it really felt that there were performances coming through,
yeah.
albeit, you know, through a layer of CGI. But I was constantly amazed. And there might be a lot of people that are cynical about sort of this technology of motion capture. I might be looking at yeah. what right in the face, but I don't know. Everything to me is jaw-dropping as far yeah. as like the look and how everything was performed and captured.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like on the one hand, I agree with you in that it felt – to me, it felt so close to real that it was almost pointless for it to be animated, that I thought, how much more money would it have cost them to really make this movie? How difficult would it really be for Steven Spielberg to get the budget to make a big live-action action-adventure? I mean, come on. Who wouldn't want to finance that? And so I think that was almost frustrating because still I feel like – and maybe it's a testament to how far the technology has come – that it looks so close but still not close enough that it just remains really frustrating. And I think – it still reminded me a lot of those Zemeckis movies where you look at it, and maybe it's not as bad as Polar Express, but some of the later ones mm-hmm. where you look at it and they just don't look like they have the right
– they have a soul.
Wait, right. It's not only that they don't – I mean, there is that too, and look in that, and there's a whole uncanny valley effect because for the most part, this movie tries to look very realistic. I mean, there's – characters have slightly exaggerated facial features, a big nose on the sea captain and the mustaches on the two policemen and Tintin's hair. But for the most part, they're meant to look like real people. And so there's definitely an uncanny valley effect. But I think also like in some of the action sequences, it doesn't feel like it has any weight to it. Like these are just little toys being thrown around rather than like real cranes that are smacking against each other or a real airplane crashing in the desert and things like that. And so to me, this was one of the ugliest visually Steven Spielberg movies I think that I've ever seen. And I think regardless of what you think about Spielberg, he is a great visual filmmaker. And I just didn't get that out of this movie at all.
Yeah, I mean, I can say I completely disagree with the idea of there not being a lot of weight. The airplane crash that you're talking about in the yeah. desert where they're fighting over this propeller and how close, you know, Tintin keeps getting to it and how the sea captain keeps trying to bring him back was like edge of your seat tension. Did you not get that?
I didn't feel any danger. I mean, part of it, too, is that I don't care. I didn't ever care about Tintin as a character. And that comes from writing and performance and not the animation necessarily. But, yeah, I mean, it all – to me, this movie felt like watching an episode of Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers or something, like a kind of weekday afternoon little animated thing for kids that might be fun to pass the time, but was really
in 3D.
Right, and in 3D, but was overall entirely forgettable, I think. And maybe that's because, I didn't grow up with Tintin, and I don't have that affection of just seeing him on screen.
I mean, that's the thing, too, is like, I didn't really grow up with it either. On a purely visceral level, I felt that he, you know, Spielberg had every sort of sense of control, from lighting to the camera angles to the way the characters move, and I think he used it to his strength, and I think this movie does that. You know, not speaking about the story, but just the you know, coming back to the tools, I guess, the mechanics of it. There were some bravado sequences that were like there's like a 7-minute sequence towards the end of the movie where it's one shot.
Right.
And that is just mesmerizing.
I honestly I love single take stuff. I may be a little too impressed with that stuff sometimes. And I didn't even notice that.
I think that's a testament to him as a filmmaker as well. And that's actually one of the things that he does well, is he'll do like a wide shot and treat it as 3 or 4 shots.
Right.
Only because like the audience is watching it and cutting it in their mind. So I think it's a testament to him.
Yeah.
But to me, that sequence is sort of what shows the possibilities, I guess, of what, you know, computer animation, motion capture could provide, I guess, an artist or a director like Spielberg, in that if you watch, I mean, I'd love to watch that sequence again and just see how so much stuff going on there that,
I mean,
you're talking about tension and you keep going back and forth like, oh, he's got it. I mean, it really does come down to the simple fact they're trying to get this MacGuffin. They keep trying to grab it from the bad guys and the bad guys
get flying through this when they're chasing through the city. Yeah,
a nail biter.
I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I didn't feel the tension. But another thing I think is that, and maybe this is a silly thing to say, but it's to me much less impressive to do something in a single shot when you could do the whole movie in a single shot because the whole movie is in a computer. You know, it's not like, wow, where did they put the camera, or how did they move this, or how did they get
those people? Well, it's a set piece, you know. It's a set. Right. I mean, just like, you know, the boulder, the rolling boulder sequence in Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's a set piece. And that is what Spielberg's great at. And when we talk about War Horse, we'll be talking about this too. But it's set pieces. I mean, he really creates memorable set pieces that when you look back at a movie, you might not remember the whole, you know, movie as a scope, but you remember the specific moment. And I think that's why that worked for this specific thing, this is how he's going to capture this set piece, because action sequences get tiresome after a while, you know, like even as something as amazing as, you know, like Transformers or Mission Impossible 4, once in a while they have to switch it up. And I think this was his way of switching it up by using the tools at hand to really do something that he couldn't have done if it was done practically.
Right.
You know, and you know, coming back to your question about why was this animated? And I think about that too. It's like when he was first announced that he would do this movie and it was going to be animated, you kind of thought, or at least I thought, that there would be Hergé-influenced design.
And like I think that would have been better too. I feel like if they had gone either way, if they had gone full live action, it could have been a really like much more impressive, weighty action movie. And if they had gone with Hergé's style like they used to do in the cartoons in the 90s, it could have been captured better, that kind of kids' afternoon feel where it's kind of cartoony and it eases the feeling of like, well, these characters don't have a lot of personality because the personality comes through in the visuals. And I felt like there was so little personality in the way this movie looked that it was just, I don't know, it was just
frustrating. No, I totally understand that as far as the aesthetics maybe of how it looked. Yes, it does look like another sort of, you know, another one of those like yearling animated films that maybe comes out of DreamWorks or something, right?
Exactly.
But you have Spielberg behind the virtual camera, and what he's doing with it, I think, is, as a fan, more important to me than really ultimately how, I guess, the graphics look. The lighting is, I mean, that's him. The camera angles, that's him.
Right.
The graphics element, the way that things look, you know, that comes down between him and the animators. So
yeah. Well, someone, I think, maybe failed on that front. But let's move on and talk about War Horse. Because this, to me, seemed more like the sort of big deal Spielberg film, where if Spielberg went away for a few years and came back, this is what I would expect to see. It's epic. It's serious. It's, I mean, and these are not necessarily always positive qualities, but it tells this kind of grand coming-of-age story, which is a big Spielberg thing. And it feels like it has that level of importance to it. I mean, I think maybe it feels like it has that level of importance to it too much a lot of the time. But I don't know. I was more impressed with him as a filmmaker in this movie, even though overall I didn't really care for the movie that much.
Yeah. I mean, to me it's a mixed bag of sort of Spielberg tropes of, you know, one great example is the first 5 minutes of the movie, which I thought were like some of the clunkiest montages.
The father is buying the horse?
Right before that, when he sees the horse, when the main character sees the horse being born.
Oh,
and then
he tries to feed it an apple.
See the horse frolicking. It's the images so go against the John Williams score, which is like this soaring, like peaks and valleys of, you know, these, you know, big, it's trying to telegraph like this sense of like bigness and epicness. And yet what we're seeing on screen is just a boy looking at a horse. From that point on,
the boy has such epic love for the horse.
It wasn't telegraphed or portrayed in a very well, well put together, cohesive manner. And I think from that like first 5 minutes, I was kind of turned off. You know, Spielberg is normally deft at doing stuff like that, doing something where he can marry, you know, the editing and the picture, and especially John Williams, he's been working with on every movie,
right?
And it just didn't. It didn't work. And I guess from that point on, I became a little bit more cognizant of, oh, here comes Spielberg pulling off, oh, that's a cool camera trick that he did there.
Right.
And I kind of became more infatuated with that. And maybe it's partly my fault, but maybe a lot of it falls on him for not being able to draw me in through the emotions and, you know, maybe trying to, not use every sort of Spielberg, you know, trick in the bag.
Every trick in the bag. I mean, this is a movie that really wants to pull on your heartstrings. I mean, really, there's a lot of emotion in this movie between the kid and the horse, and then the farm is going to get taken away, and the tragedies of war. And it's not even like one or two tragedies of war, but like the horse just keeps going from one tragedy of war to the next, and the little girl, and I mean, everything. It was just so much.
I think
there are people who are going to watch this movie and are just going to bawl their eyes out from start to finish. But to me, it just felt so sappy and so manipulative. And of course, when you have an animal that's in peril the whole time, that right there is just a really easy way to go to that. Well, you know, it's not a human being who can pull out a gun and shoot his way out of trouble or whatever. This poor horse is being stuck in the middle of the war.
Mm-hmm. And it used as a, you know, used as a storytelling pawn. I mean, it reminds me of like the movies in the 90s. There's a couple of them where it was like, one was about like a dollar bill or $20 bill that kind of passed around between all these characters that each tell their story.
Right.
After a while, the horse kind of became this like, this prop, this like $20
just
bill.
Just a thing. You're like, oh, when is he going to run off to the next
exactly.
person?
Exactly. When I felt I should have been at some point connected with this horse and really, because there's a way to do it. I mean, have you seen like Black Beauty or any of those sort of like, you know, horse movies as a subgenre?
Yeah.
You know, there's ways of doing it, but I never felt that maybe that wasn't what he was trying to do. But I would think, you know, a movie called War Horse, that there would be some sort of moment when you need to connect with the horse in order to care about it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there are times where you see a lot of close-ups of like the horse's face and it's they're definitely projecting emotions onto the horse.
Yes, yes.
If it's anguished or it's feeling a connection with the people who are treating it nicely or whatever. And I didn't connect. To me, it reminded me of like a Benji movie.
Yeah.
Where Benji runs away from the evil pound or whatever and has to get back to his loving owner. And along the way encounters all of these people who help him and some people who don't help him. And I don't know. That's, every comparison that came to mind to me as I was watching this movie was not favorable. I mean, the other thing is when you get back to the kid and he grows up a little and he has to go off to war and he's carrying the little picture of the horse with him as he's sitting in the trenches. It's like a Nicholas Sparks romance, except instead of a girl, you got the horse. And it was just so corny. And
it was corny and I think unbalanced. I mean, there were some moments that were so dark.
Yeah.
And there were some light moments. I mean, there were very few light moments, but that was another thing too. And it might be an interesting thing maybe on second viewing, but there are parts where the machinations of the story keep propelling forward and characters leave the storyline through whatever means and you kind of are attached to them, but the story keeps trucking along.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt disoriented at certain points going, I'm still thinking about that thing, but now you have this thing right. that now I'm supposed to care about all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know?
Just as you get to the point of sort of being a little invested in what's happening to these human characters, they're gone.
Exactly.
And then you just got the damn horse.
The damn stupid horse.
I will say, though, there was some good battle stuff in this movie.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that to me was way more impressive than any of the action in Tintin. That at least that I thought, you know, and it's much less violent than like Saving Private Ryan or something because it's a family film, but he got the World War One, the trench warfare, that kind
what of. What he's good at.
Right. I mean, chaos and confusion. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, bringing back the set pieces thing from Tintin is that there are like two or three huge set pieces that you remember. I mean, for me, the most haunting one is the first part where they're the tree line where the men on the horses. British men on the horses are headed towards the tree line.
Right, right.
And you're you're seeing them come off screen with riders
right,
on them.
Right.
And then you cut to the scene, you know, on the German side and the right. horses are riderless.
Like right.
that right there nails what Spielberg is so good at doing is telling something emotionally through you know, a visual.
Right.
So that those parts were great. And then you would dive into like what you talked about, where it's, you know, a kid with a, you know, picture of a horse in his
right.
jacket. Like, you know, they're not the same. They're not of the same movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's ultimately what I felt was off about it. It was
yeah.
really like, yeah, just a mixed bag of.
Yeah. It made me feel like I would like to see just a straight up World War One movie by Steven Spielberg, because that would probably have been really interesting. And the friggin' horse was holding it all back.
Yeah.
Although he's the whole point of the movie.
Yeah.
It
might have worked as a – I'm thinking like maybe there wasn't enough time because doesn't it feel
– It's really long though.
Really?
It's two and a half hours long.
Oh, that's not long to me.
Well, it felt long because –
I just felt like there wasn't enough time to tell the scope of what he was trying to do.
I mean, he does throw in a lot of – because there's a lot of little stories, the horse going from one place to another, there's not necessarily enough time for each element. But I thought the movie overall – there was plenty of it. I did not want more of it.
A miniseries, maybe.
Oh, boy.
Or Horse the miniseries.
Oh, boy. So where would you place these movies sort of in the Spielberg canon?
Probably somewhere towards, I mean, as far as his great work, I mean, in the middle, you know, below, I don't know, like War Horse and Saving Private Ryan, like, I don't know, I'd probably place War Horse before, you know, below Saving Private Ryan, in that sort of realm of like historic,
right.
you know, war,
right.
war movies. If you can call War Horse a war movie, I don't know.
Yeah,
Tintin is, you know, it's probably like from mid to somewhere in the middle of the top to mid, I guess you could say, of his movies. Nothing to really write home about. I think it's an interesting experiment for him,
right.
as a filmmaker to actually try his hand at. This new fandangled 3D motion capture, especially with a guy that's, you know, so adamant about shooting on film and editing on flatbed.
War Horse was digitally edited too. I think
his
I read
first,
that somewhere.
Yeah, it was his first one digitally
right,
edited.
Right.
So,
what's your favorite Steven Spielberg movie?
Well, it's tough because there's a lot of great movies. I think like a lot of people who have top 10 movies, it tends to sort of. Those 10 movies tend to change over time.
Sure.
Usually kind of come back to the same 10. But I really love Sugarland Express.
Really?
Okay. I don't know if you've seen it. But
I actually haven't. But, I mean, that's an interesting choice of all the Spielberg movies that there are.
It was his second movie. It was right after he did Duels, 1970s, with Goldie Hawn.
Yeah.
It's basically about this woman who frees her husband from prison. And it's sort of a chase film after that. But there is a rawness to that movie, and there are things that he does in that film which to this day still hold up. Like that movie as a whole still, you know, stands up. I mean, if you look at like THX 1138, George Lucas's first film, before this sort of redone version, there's a lot of there's a lot of things that you notice that are kind of off, and you kind of like for that time, you kind of like put it to the side and go, you know, it was made during that time. But there's a rawness to Sugarland Express, but also a polished feel. Like he really found himself in that movie artistically. If you look at the movie from editing to, once again, come back to set pieces, there's a sequence where there is there's two police cars on a road and the camera shooting them from the outside. But rather than move the camera from one car to the other, the cars themselves accelerate and decelerate. Hmm. So you'll have one cop talking to the other cop that's behind him. He'll speed up and the other car behind him will come up into view. And it goes from close up to wide shot to like behind the car shot all in one single take. And to think that he did this in his second film in the 1970s, I think showed a lot, you know, it showed a lot of what he could accomplish, I think, as a visual artist. And the story is very much ingrained in that whole idea of family, because it is about this woman who's trying to, you know, bring her family together despite the husband, you know, being a criminal. And so to visit that movie, I think, with the context of his, you know, his career now, his second act or third act of his career, however you want to number it, it really does stand up. And I think, to me, a lot of the reason why I love Spielberg as a filmmaker is in that in that movie.
Oh, it really makes me want to see. You made a very good case for that movie. I really want to see
it. It's good. It's really, really. Yeah, I can't speak highly enough of
that. Wow. Yeah, because I mean, I would say, I mean, my favorite, that when I was looking through, and I realized, like, I've always been sort of indifferent to Spielberg. Like, I've seen a lot of his movies, and mostly I think they're pretty good, but rarely do they really grab me, make me want to see them again, or make me feel something. I mean, my favorite Spielberg movie is probably Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is a great movie, but it's just a fun action adventure.
Yeah.
It's extremely entertaining, but it's not something that I don't think necessarily reaches you on a level beyond that. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No,
I mean, it's great fun. I mean, I watched it again a few years ago before Crystal Skull came out, and I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I remember thinking, like, wow, this is really just a really good movie. It's a lot of fun to watch. I'm having a great time.
And then you saw Crystal Skull.
And which I don't hate as much as a lot of people do. I think probably because I don't have that huge investment in the Indiana Jones series. And I was like, well, this was just kind of dumb, but oh well.
just a little dumb.
Yeah. Just a little. I mean,
you
there's still some fun set pieces.
Swinging with
movie.
Monkeys, you know, to, to a Jeep.
But there was the what was this? The sequence in that movie where the ants, is it ants? That was kind of cool.
That was cool. But everything that preceded with Shia LaBeouf swinging with monkeys.
Yeah.
Was Spielberg, what are you doing? This does not look cool at all. It's actually really dumb.
Yeah.
But no, I think Raiders of the Lost Ark, for sure, it's one of his great movies. You know, I was thinking about this, like, why Spielberg has always kind of been, for me, one of the best filmmakers. And I think, at first, he colors your childhood, you know, from E.T. to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
To when you really, you know, as you get older, you start looking at more sort of much more like difficult or challenging works. And then you have that in Schindler's List, right?
Yeah.
Like he sort of matured along, at least with my tastes.
Right.
And he still does, you know, like going from Raiders of the Lost Ark being an amazing action movie when I was a kid to like now just seeing his work and going just what he does with the camera to what he does with, you know, with the cinematography and the music, like seeing it at that level still sort of puts him for me on the top of my list every single time. I mean, he really is, in my mind, one of the, you know, the greatest living filmmaker currently.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he's not really good in his third acts, you know, described by his last few films.
Right.
And that's unfortunate. But technically as a filmmaker, he's no one matches him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think he's a great craftsman.
Yes.
I think his movies don't necessarily reach me on a level beyond that. And I think that maybe is why that the movies of his that I like the most are the ones that are purely just about craft. The action, the good Indiana Jones movies,
yes.
Or Jaws or Jurassic Park, where it's just like sheer like excitement generation. And he's really, really good at that, I think. So these new two, not his best work, though.
Definitely not his best work. And I'm hoping that Lincoln, which he's working on with Liam Neeson.
Right.
It's
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Liam Neeson.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, did I say Liam Neeson? Sorry. Daniel Day-Lewis. Not that I really wanted Liam Neeson to be Lincoln. But hopefully he gains his footing again in the dramatics of, you know, being able to tell this story, because he did Amistad, which I don't know if you saw.
Yeah, I have seen Amistad.
Horrendous. Yeah. Do you agree?
I mean, I liked it at the time. I haven't seen it since it came out.
It's you know, we talk about clunky. I mean, it is probably one of his
I do
worst
remember
movies.
That one moment. What is it when the slave says, like, give us free.
Yes.
And that was a little much, yes.
Yeah, and I really hope that with Lincoln, because he does have such an amazing actor,
right,
that he doesn't, you know, fall into the trappings that kind of, for me at least, ruined these two films. and maybe these two films are sort of the fact that they're not that good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, maybe it's just showing he's being chipped at a little bit, you know, like his
right.
His confidence maybe is outweighing his judgment and right. like,
yeah.
this is how to tell a story. Right. This is how I'm going to tell this story, you yeah. know. But he's been working on Lincoln for
right. No, I mean, I look forward to it as well. And hopefully, you know, we'll hope for good things from it. So thank you, Roger Eric Tinch, for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
For Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your